The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
From issue number 3, Winter 1999, The War for More, Weapons, Conflict and Mind Control. War and conflict are issues which run through much of this issue of The Information, both political and technological. To put it simply, war is one group of humans not liking another and using force against them, usually over territory or beliefs. Whether it's Stone Age tribes whacking each other with clubs, jets launching missiles at cities, or secret weapons being used in a covert manner, war has much the same pattern. It can exist against a definite named enemy or parts of society the authorities do not accept. One man's freedom can be another's suppression, so if we go to fundamentals, it must be addressed as a moral issue. But who is good and who is bad? Few have halos round their heads, so who has the Satan horns? It seems best to look at the psychology of an individual or society. Do they care for others and treat them with respect? We may not agree with different cultures, but if we can at least tolerate or understand them, then we are unlikely to be warlike. We need to recognize these moral values in the form of basic human rights which apply to the whole population of this planet, even those we might think of as enemies. However, a peaceful and beneficent scenario has not been one pursued by the forces which run the world. The Information attended an excellent conference on May 30th, 1998, in London, organised by Amnesty International and Oxfam. Human rights, arms and war were covered. It was amusing to see the dreaded C-word, conspiracy, mentioned a few times. Certainly to a conspiracy theorist, many factors referred to would fit a view of a world manipulated by powerful, shady groups. One major part is the industrial-military complex, named as such in an arms control workshop, which makes a fortune from international arms sales, often to repressive regimes. Those trying to trace such sales in Britain have met a blank wall. Bizarrely, communist China lists all sales publicly, while Britain can offer only no trade in this heading, or totally suppressed. This refers to jets, tanks, etc., not anything more secret. It is also stated information on small arms, such as pistols and rifles, can only be given at disproportionate cost, i.e. it would keep the civil service too busy to provide them. A government computer, Eclipse, malfunctioned when information was requested, leading to thoughts of a cover-up. Some major advances are trailed in the press, however. The Guardian, Wednesday, July 29, 1998, showed the electric-powered Trimaran stealth ship of the future, with long-range and radar infrared shielding. Sleight of hand. The arms trade has many tricks it can use to further muddy the picture. The cutout is a deal made through a third party, which then becomes untraceable and thus secret. Seemingly innocent spares may also be exported, but built into weapons in another country and then sold on to an aggressor. There are various shady manoeuvres between public and private sectors. For example, the Government Export Sales Organisation has accepted seconded personnel from private industry, but then de-seconded them back to private firms, so they have a spurious government authority which massages the morality of a deal. There is also big trade in weapons personnel, training and expertise. The needs of commercial confidentiality override public information on whether such weapons include, for example, torture equipment. So is the answer to chuck in all weapons? I don't think so. There is a legitimate need for defence, but it should be seen as a necessary evil, not an opportunity for a quick buck. Respect for life on this planet would lead to such an approach. International human rights legislation could be a way forward, although it is vital not to oversimplify the issues, and we do not want a global government established on the back of a moral crusade. It could only be over-centralised and, according to the New World Order conspiracy theories, in truth, of malicious intent. As with Europe, there is both good and bad in such an approach, but is the good a mere sweetener towards centralised power or something worthwhile? Perhaps anything good is worth having, since we may be even more powerless otherwise. Europe is introducing its own Human Rights Act, which, while imperfect, should establish a basic minimum, a platform, not a ceiling of attainment. Such rights spark complex issues, which we'll examine briefly. Britain, till now, has been one of the most centralised governments in the world and tends to see rights as a law and order criminal justice issue, i.e. do you have the right to do this? Such an approach can cause social exclusion and an enemy within which can be blamed for society's ills, the unemployed, disabled, young, etc. Vandalism and graffiti become a kind of alternative expression which, while regrettable, is best understood as an illness of society than an evil act. Graffiti is no more gaudy and intrusive than a million corporate logos and advertisements, and no one's selling anything. The much-quoted "no rights without responsibilities" phrase is an example of verbal mind control. We've used it ourselves. It's actually pretty meaningless, because if a right is a right, it has no relation to anything. We say we have the right to trash the planet, but do it in a responsible way, which is nonsense. Such a view also sheds light on animal rights. Do animals have responsibilities? Not in human terms, but they still have rights. The phrase leads to fast-track justice and punishment, with little thought to the cause of conflict. It also offers the rich a deserving-poor approach to top-down charitable works. In truth, many of the rights we say we have, with responsibility, we should not have at all, while the most basic, which should ask no concessions, are denied. The fact that you haven't been aborted before birth must mean the world accepts you as valid. Therefore, you must have the basic right to clean air, food and shelter. No fudging on pollution control, genetically modified organisms and privatised water monopolies can hide this. Only confuse our vision. Even enemies might support basic rights. They need them too. Different groups define rights in their own terms. According to Professor Conor Gerty, lawyers might see them as something in the document. Philosophers, a trump card to further society. Campaigners, a means to an end. The truth is more fundamental. They are a recognition of human dignity, which, if recognised, would throw a very different light on world conflict. It is also vital the establishment cannot cherry-pick those rights which best fit their agendas. Conflict and calm. Damage to the social and environmental fabric of the world not caused by natural disasters has to be man-made. So it follows that if one group of humans does not like what the other group is doing, conflicts will arise. These can be in the form of wars, discrimination, sanctions, protests. But to the powers that be, the controllers who wish to win and retain power, such situations are a nuisance. How much better if a docile population merely conceded to their demands? Some form of social or mind control would be the logical invention. How do we define mind control? Obviously, any kind of influence over somebody else, particularly moving them from their natural inclinations, is a form of mind control. We will be publishing a booklet on this soon called The Cult of Compromise, explaining how advertising, legislation and discrimination all play a part. Well, we're still waiting for that to come out. There are also other technological means which fit the definition more literally. However, all forms of mind control are part of the same agenda to create an elitist technocratic society based on concentrations of industrial, media and political power into the hands of a relatively small number. This is known, unofficially, as the New World Order. The controllers have been defined in several ways, but are sometimes called the Brotherhood or Illuminati. They are by no means a coherent group, perhaps having conflicts of interests themselves. Big Brother. George Orwell's seminal dystopia, 1984, has been quoted times beyond number as a study of a future totalitarian regime. The overt repression in the story can be seen as satirical, given what is becoming known about the actual scenario. The Information's favourite TV programme, For the Love Of, featured the Big Brother subject on Monday, April 6, Channel 4. Guest Tim Rifat explained his findings on microwave weapons, while Tim Matthews added the secret flying saucer angle, accused of triviality by healer Ivan Fraser, and being a plant. There is a complex web here which takes time to unravel. Last issue we explained how Matthews' real name was Heppel, and have since received the following news in a letter.
Apparently he is writing a book about how Nazi World War II scientists invented flying saucers, to be published by Blandford this year or next. My opinion is that Heppel is acting as a smokescreen for something else. Everyone starts looking his way because they are meant to, and meanwhile, something else much more important is going on. Larry O'Hara wrote to the Blandford publisher, warning them they were on dodgy ground, aspects of Holocaust revisionism, Nazi apologetics, but did not get a satisfactory reply. Personally, I think MI5 are sponsoring Heppel's book. There are various other theories about what is going on. One, it is a spoiler operation against UFO enthusiasts. Heppel is trying to stimulate interest in fascism, all the better to get them branded as extremists, and so justify yet more state surveillance, psyops against them, etc. Also, encouraging UFO people to break into military bases, a similar act of agent provocateurism. Nazis in the UFO world, more state repression, like extremist politics on the internet, justifying censorship. Make no mistake, if Heppel is involved in the UFO scene, one, he intends to wreck it, two, the secret state are involved in some way.
So if Heppel was trying to hijack for the love of, the question has to be why? What else was said? Well, Tim Rifat offered much chilling information on microwave weapons being used, not on some distant battlefield, but here, now, among us. He had been around Brighton with a microwave counter, detecting numerous emissions. The information contacted Mr. Rifat, who sent us far more detail. First, while the radiation dangers of mobile phones have been mentioned in the media, and screens are available, the levels of radiation they emit are far higher, in fact could be used as a lethal weapon to kill the user, should a certain level of signal be broadcast. Vodafone, 847 MHz at over 100 milliwatts per centimeter squared, which is 20 times the danger level for microwave ovens. Even safe phones have been shown to cause cancer in mice. Forget those wonderful lifestyle ads. Chuck the damn thing away. As for mind control, all phones can transmit ELF, extremely low frequency signals. These cannot be heard consciously by the listener, but mimic our brainwaves and thus affect behaviour. According to Rifat, people around these microwave transmitters are turned into submissive zombies who cannot think clearly, become depressed, apathetic, and want to lounge around all day doing nothing. Could this explain Brighton's slacker image? No joke. Rifat has monitored large amounts of ELF transmissions here, but had his microwave frequency counter confiscated by the police shortly after For the Love Of was made, February 1998. Is Brighton the testing ground for a secret state mind control program? The evidence is worrying when we learn such frequency counters, such as the Watson FC-128, have all been bought up by the government, with only modified versions now available for purchase. The information can corroborate some of this with two findings. Research assistant Paul Dixon is a radio buff, but has found that the cost of civilian scanners, i.e. advanced multiband radios, has been jacked up by 50% in the last few months to discourage purchase. The shortwave band on common transmitters has also been banned on new sets. We also attended a fascinating talk by Peter Howell, an ex-BBC Radiophonic Workshop employee, during the Brighton Festival. Howell used to create sound effects for Doctor Who and revealed one trick they played on sound engineers. Ultra-low frequency sounds known as subsonics could be sent through a normal speaker, driving the needle into the red while nothing could be heard. Great fun, but could these signals affect the mind? An article in the Daily Mail, Wednesday, June 24, 1998, revealed an experimental acoustic cannon with non-lethal crowd control as its aim, being developed by the US Army Armament Research Development and Engineering Center. It can be used to subdue crowds up to 110 yards away by firing sound waves 10 times that of a rock concert. According to Jane's Defense Weekly, it makes it feel like your insides are tossing about all over the place. If this is public, what isn't? Rifat concludes, it is obvious that a total policing of the population by means of UHF, VHF and microwave, EM radiation, among others, is being used to keep the UK population in a docile and submissive mental state. Subversives are habitually targeted with microwaves to drive them mad or make them fatally ill. Think till it hurts. Psi warfare is another branch of secret defense assault which uses the latent power of the mind as a tactical weapon. While many listeners may accept hidden technology, is it too much to believe in psi warfare? To do so, we first have to accept that extrasensory perception and psychic powers are not fairy tale stuff. If we can go so far, then it figures that they can be used for good or ill. But it is a fact that both the USA and Russia have spent millions on secret psi warfare programs, developing abilities such as remote viewing, a kind of applied astral projection, and telekinesis, moving or affecting objects. The malign or oppressive use of such abilities is about as far from human rights as you can get. But Britain, as a supposed democracy, cannot use the overt Orwellian techniques. Does Blair's government know all this, or are they merely naive puppets of the true power brokers? The X Game. There is highly convincing evidence to suggest the 1992 general election was actually a Labour win, but a few votes were manipulated to create the Tory win, surprising Mori, etc. Ken Livingstone once wrote a book called If Voting Changed Anything, They'd Abolish It. The Tories were returned in 1992, allowing them to continue their right-wing policies of CJA, JSA, privatisation, DBFO, roads, etc. But did they really win? Analysis of the 1992 results shows the Tory majority was 21 seats, won on only 11 marginal constituencies. In total, these turned on just 1,241 votes, about 100 votes each. This small number of votes could easily be faked, though this would indicate a higher turnout. Analysis of marginals won by a low Tory swing has revealed an average 81.4% turnout, over a national average of 77.7%. Labour marginal wins, however, still only had an average 78.8% turnout. It seems possible that MI5 were given the job to swing the election, which every exit poll said should have been a Labour win. The theory was outlined in fictionalised form in the thriller Game 10 by James Long. Simon and Schuster, 1994. The ISBN number is 0671718088. This could have been done by covert tampering of ballot boxes, but given the reference numbers, such a tactic might be detectable. Could mind control technology be used to influence voters? Given these figures, the effect need only have been quite small to work. Obviously, a large Labour vote could not be suppressed in such a way. But then, how different are Labour and the Tories now? If we go crazy on conspiracy theories, it was handy how the moderate Labour leader John Smith subsequently died, allowing the more right-wing, groomed, Tony Blair into power. Given Labour fudges and U-turns since then, could New Labour literally be not Labour at all, but the puppet of a covert power elite, part of the New World Order? I would not claim John Smith was assassinated. What I would say is, given the apparent power of psi warfare and secret weaponry, it would be possible to induce heart seizure at will. MK Ultra. MKUltra was the name of a top-secret joint CIA British Special Intelligence Service, SIS, mind control project of the 1950s. In 1953, Dr. Frank Olson, who had worked on the project but had allegedly become sickened by the Nazi-style human experiments it involved, committed suicide. Now, in 1998, his son is trying to prove in court that this was a CIA murder. Part of MKUltra tried to make subjects assassinate close colleagues after being fed drugs through cocktails, etc. Some work was done by Dr. Olson at Porton Down and an intelligence facility in Sussex. If workable, such a technique could be used against anyone troublesome, such as Diana, by mind-controlling her drunk driver to crash. Sick biology. The existence of another range of weaponry was revealed in BBC TV's Panorama of Monday, July 13, 1998. According to a dissident scientist, the Soviet biological weapons program is still up and running in Siberia. One scientist was accidentally injected with what became known as Variant Ustinov and died after 2 weeks of agony, literally sweating blood. Such weapons could wipe out human populations but leave infrastructure intact and are highly cost-effective compared to nuclear technology. London, for example, could have been cluster-bombed from the air with anthrax plague or smallpox, taking us back to the Middle Ages. A 15-mile spray with prevailing winds could wipe out 60% of the city's population. 80 Russian scientists died when an experimental strain contaminated a research base. Britain and the US have apparently ended all offensive biological research and have defensive capability, vaccinations only. The Russian position is illegal since they are signatory to non-biological treaties. Making deadly toxins is a little bit more difficult than making beer with recipes available on the internet with no moral qualms by fringe scientists. Even Britain's secret Porton Down biological warfare base regard this as highly dangerous, the poor man's nuclear bomb. Interesting to note, Greenpeace planned to assemble a nuclear bomb a few years ago to show how easy it would be. The group dropped the plan, fearing its reputation would be harmed. An even more troubling aspect is the use of genetic engineering to modify and merge existing viruses. It could be possible to make selective viruses which only attack certain racial groups or lay dormant for years. Such weapons would make Hitler-style holocausts look amateurish.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.